Hey, Loco sports fans, when you hear Horizon Rehabilitation and Sports Medicine, think advanced, local, and specialized therapy care. The team at Horizon prides themselves on the diversity of their 30-plus specialized treatment programs, including advanced sports medicine and orthopedic care, as they offer the area's only Alter-G treadmill and have an indoor heated resistance therapy pool. For nearly 15 years, Horizon's outpatient, physical, occupational, and sports medicine programs have been addressing the needs of athletes, weekend warriors, and their fans. At any level, at any age or stage, their specialized therapists and athletic trainers are ready to get you back in the game. Visit HorizonRehabilitation.com for more information or call 843-671-REHAB. That's 843-671-REHAB. Horizon Rehabilitation and Sports Medicine, proud sponsors of LocoSports.com.
Hey, Loco sports fans, welcome to another Loco sit-down interview. This is where myself, Justin Jarrett, and Wes Kerr team up to talk to some of the key figures in the local sports scene, and some of them have a little wider-reaching tentacles than others, and that's the case with our guest today, a guy we've talked to on the show before and gotten to have a great relationship with over the years here at Loco Sports, and that's former Bengals quarterback and Bengals legend, really, Kenny Anderson, a Hilton Head resident. It's been around this area for a long time. And Kenny, we always love talking to you during this time of year when it's NFL season and talking a little bit of football with you. And I know you keep tabs on the local teams a little bit too, but what have you been up to, man? You're a busy guy in your retirement. What have you been working on lately?
Well, not a lot. A lot of stuff going on with my foundation in Cincinnati, the Ken Anderson Alliance. I've opened up a coffee shop called Just Brew that employs 14 adults with disabilities and getting ready to open up a second one, getting ready to open up a hydroponics venture that'll employ some people. So just a lot of good things going on with the foundation. And again, our mission is to create live, work, and engage opportunities for adults with disabilities.
Yeah, that's outstanding, Ken. And congratulations on your recent induction. A big honor for you recently. You were inducted into the Cincinnati Bengals Ring of Honor. Such a deserving accomplishment for you. Take me through that moment and that experience, seeing your name honored among the franchise's greatest players.
Well, you know, it was really special because this was the inaugural class of the Ring of Honor. And to go in with, you know, Paul Brown, who was my first coach and a member of the National Football League Hall of Fame, Anthony Munoz, a teammate of mine for a long time, again, a member of the Hall of Fame. Kenny Riley, a great defensive back who unfortunately passed away a couple of years ago, but has 65 career interceptions in the National Football League. Only four have more than him. They're all in the Hall of Fame. People behind him are in the Hall of Fame. I don't know why he's not in the Hall of Fame. But just, you know, to be a part of that. And, you know, I think as everybody knows, the Bengals sometimes get slammed in the national media, and to have this happen and to think back about the teams we had in the 70s and the 80s when we were as good as anybody in the National Football League and, you know, had a reputation of being a good football team, of being a winning football team. So it's just, like I said, just nice to be part of that inaugural class.
Yeah, and you're making the Hall of Fame case for some other guys here, but there's some people who would be out there carrying the torch for you too, and you had some numbers that certainly rivaled some of the best guys in that era. Do you give much thought to that, or is that a if it happens, it happens kind of thing?
Well, I think if it happens, it happens. It's when you get to the senior committee, it's there's so many deserving players. And I think now that what they do is they do one senior a year, one coach a year, and one contributor a year. So I know there's so many deserving retired players that, should be in the Hall of Fame. And, you know, it takes a while to get to all of them. And like I say, I told some of the voters at one point, they said, well, I think you'll get in someday. I says, can you do it while I'm young enough where I can still enjoy it? So we'll see what happens.
Well, I certainly think you are deserving and wish you the best of luck going forward. And looking back at your career, tell me about what you love the most about being in Cincinnati, about the city, about the fan base, a terrific, terrific group of fans there. And of course, that amazing run to the Super Bowl. winning what was the coldest game in NFL history, the Freezer Bowl. What were your favorite memories over the years during your time as a Bengal?
Well, you know, I think number one, just getting a chance to play in Cincinnati. You know, when you're a small town kid from Batavia, Illinois, and you go to a Division III school in Rock Island, Illinois, going to Cincinnati and with that structure of Paul Brown was a good fit for me. And it was so exciting because, you know, my mom and dad still lived outside the Chicago area, and they never missed a home game in 16 years. So it was close enough for them, you know, to get to. But, you know, I think it's just, you know, going back to the start, you know, the Bengals in their third year of existence, the year before I got there, had gone to the playoffs with Virgil Carter as the starting quarterback. And I think that was the quickest expansion franchise to ever go to the playoffs. And I think obviously Paul Brown had a great influence on that. But, you know, to start my career with Paul Brown and my first quarterback coach and offensive coordinator was Bill Walsh, it kind of just gave me a solid foundation for the rest of my career. And then, you know, coaching, you know, everything I taught quarterbacks was kind of based on what Bill Walsh told me back in those days. But, you know, I think the biggest game I ever played in was probably the Super Bowl, but I say that's not the most memorable. You know, we didn't win that game. And so I go back to the game before the AFC Championship game when we beat the San Diego Chargers in Cincinnati and the temperature was 59 below with the wind chill down. You know, to play in the coldest game in NFL history, to be successful and actually play a pretty good football game, I take a lot of pride in that.
No question. That's incredible conditions that you can't prepare yourself for. You've just got to be mentally strong in that situation. You mentioned the Bengals have gotten a little beaten up and the reputation of the franchise has taken a hit over the years, but very exciting team right now. I mean, Sunday's result notwithstanding, what do you think about this group they've got now, and especially that young quarterback receiver duo with Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase? How excited are you to watch those guys on Sundays?
Oh, it's a lot of fun. You know, it's a young football team, and you know, I think as we all know that you can't be successful as a franchise without a quarterback, and with Joe Burrow, the Bengals have the real deal. And you know, I know it was a little bit disappointing, you know, so much hype going in after beating Baltimore in Baltimore last week to go to 5-2. And then all of a sudden you kind of stub your toe against the Jets in New York. But, you know, some people say, well, it's the same old Bengals. Well, you know, these guys don't have that stigma attached to them. They haven't been here through some of those moments that a lot of the fans have been there. They don't know anything except trying to win football games and trying to get to the playoffs. And I think they've got a great shot to do that.
Yeah, I certainly agree. And you know, in the NFL, you always have to be on the top of your game every week. And if you're not, you're going to find yourselves on the wrong end of the scoreboard. And, you know, up 11 points late, looking like another victory over the New York Jets, a team that was really struggling. But, you know, it just shows you got to put in the effort for all 60 minutes. And unfortunately, fell apart at the end. But what lessons will this game teach for a young team and a young quarterback going forward?
Well, you know, I think just what you said, Wes, is that you can't ever take your foot off the gas. And, you know, I think they've learned, you know, so many lessons. And I go back to the Thursday night game where we were inducted into the Ring of Honor and they're playing the Jaguars. And they had just come off a big road win against the Steelers. And, you know, you think they're flying high and all of a sudden kind of laid an egg the first half and they're behind 14-0, but they were resilient and played a great second half and come out and won the football game. And they've won a close game against Minnesota in their opening on a last second field goal to Baltimore and being down and pulling that game out and winning convincingly. You know, they got a lot of good things to draw from. And I'm really a Zach Taylor fan. I think he's done a great job as the head coach. And, you know, as long as we keep Joe Burrow upright, I think we got a good chance.
You clearly still have such a connection to that franchise, having played for it for your entire career. And there just aren't guys who really do that anymore. It's the game has changed. The business side of things has changed so much. And even a guy like Tom Brady, you know, he goes and finishes his career somewhere else. Do you think something's lost there? I mean, these guys that retire now, having played for three or four franchises, they can't possibly have that same kind of bond to that franchise that you do, right?
Well, you know, it's just different nowadays. As you said, you know, it is a business. And, you know, although it was in those days, we didn't make nearly the money that they're making nowadays. And, you know, you didn't leave a team unless they traded you or cut you. There was no free agency back then. And so I think the fans had a chance to connect with the players over a, you know, a long period of time. But, you know, I am all for the players getting as much money as they can for what they do out there. And the much money is that the National Football League generates each year, the players deserve, you know, their share of it. So I'm happy, you know, for the players, but, you know, with the salary cap issue, and, you know, I think so many teams have gone through it that when you get a good quarterback and you get him on his rookie deal, you can afford to put the pieces around him. But all of a sudden, when he gets that first new contract, he takes up such a big portion of the salary cap. Sometimes it's tough to put the complementary pieces with him.
Absolutely. And I'm really impressed by Joe Burrow and what he has done this year coming back from that ACL tear. What are the biggest challenges in recovering from such a severe injury and looking to return to that same level of play that you had before him?
Well, I think, you know, just a lot of it is mental, you know, trusting that your knee is going to hold up. And you know, you do a lot of things out in the practice field. Of course, you don't get hit out there and you try to simulate it as much as you can. But I think one of the players, and I don't know if it was the first or second game, and Burroughs had scrambled and dove for a first down. I think it was Joe Mixon that said, all right, our quarterback is back. You know, he's been through it. He's trusted it. And I think, you know, from a mental standpoint, okay, my knee's fine. I'll just go out and play now.
Yeah, kind of once you get past that initial fear of testing it, you start to gain confidence in it, I'm sure. Now, you've done a good bit of coaching young quarterbacks, too. What are some of the things that you work on with young guys to try to, or the common things, I guess, that you see that they need to work on to be able to elevate their game and continue to play at a high level?
Well, I think, you know, it all goes back to basics. And I remember, you know, I had a great start of my career in, you know, 73, 74, 75, 76. And, you know, all of a sudden, you know, Paul Brown retires. We had a couple of coaching changes and, you know, I'm not playing as well. And then we got a new offensive coordinator and Lindy Infante, who came in with Forrest Gregg. And we watched a lot of tape together. And just for whatever reasons, you know, I'd got in some bad habits mechanically with footwork, and we went back to the basics. And I think, you know, for all quarterbacks to be successful, you've got to be, you know, sound in your footwork. And I remember Steve Young once had the comment, he said, if you just film me from the waist down, I can tell you whether I played well or not. And then I think, you know, the next thing is just decision-making as best as you can. You know when that you got to give up on a play, when to try to extend the play, not to force the football, not to turn it over. And I think that's one thing that kills a football team more than anything is the turnovers. And you look at most NFL games, and whoever wins the turnover battle generally wins the game. And, you know, and that's one of the things I'm so impressed with Joe Burrow about, is just his moxie of the game. And, you know, he's got a great football IQ. His dad was a high school football coach. You know, and one goes back, a couple of games ago that they won it at the end. And, you know, he saw an all-out blitz coming, and they had three receivers to the outside. But the outside guy happened to be C.J. Uzama, their tight end. But he audible to a wide receiver screen. And it really hadn't worked on it. But by formation, everybody knew the rules. And he caught it, made about 30 yards, and set him up for the game-winning field goal. So he sees things out there extremely well. And, you know, he's a stand-up guy. He doesn't shy away from the responsibility. And, you know, I think he just shows great leadership qualities.
You mentioned Uzama, who's had a great year at tight end, Joe Mixon carrying the ball. And how about that young wide receiver group of Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins? Tell me about the strides that this offense has made so far this year.
Well, you know, I think it all started in the, you know, in the preseason when, you know, the talk was, should they have taken the offensive tackle from Oregon instead of Ja'Marr Chase? You know, we got to protect Joe Burrow. And all of a sudden, you know, in the preseason, the limited amount of time that he played, I mean, he couldn't catch a pass. And everybody was worried about him. And I think it was in the locker room before their opener, and one of the veterans came up to Joe Burrow and he says, boy, I said, I'm a little worried about, you know, Ja'Marr, you know, today starting the season. He says, don't worry about him. He shows up on Sundays. And, you know, right from the beginning, he was a big play receiver. And, you know, and T. Higgins, you know, showed what he could do. last year, and they've still got Tyler Boyd. And with the emergence of Uzama, you know, you mentioned Joe Mixon, I think, who's one of the top backs in the game, whether it's, you know, catching the ball on screen passes or running. So, you know, the offensive line is all of a sudden is gotten a little bit better together as a unit. I think there's been some continuity now the first 5-6 weeks of the season. So they're playing pretty good. So, you know, I think from an offensive standpoint, things look good. And, you know, although the defense gave up some plays last week, you know, they spent a lot of money on them the last two off seasons on defensive players in free agency. And I think some of those guys are going to prove that they're going to really help our defense.
You were kind of in that pioneering group with the West Coast offense and you know, really some innovative stuff that really kind of changes the game, especially at the NFL level. And we've seen that kind of continue to evolve over the years. When you watch the game now, you know, what do you think about the spread offenses and the different things people are doing on offense? And would you have enjoyed playing in today's offenses?
Oh, heck yeah. you know, and the thing I really like is they can't hit quarterbacks anymore. So that would have been something, you know, really nice. But, you know, I think I would have, you know, fit in real well with today's, you know, game because I was, you know, a pretty mobile quarterback when I played. And so, I mean, I could do the read options and all those run pass options, those kind of things. And, you know, the way that, again, you know, Isaac Curtis was the one that kind of changed that back in my day. Where you can't mug receivers down the field. So you got a chance to get guys open. And, you know, when I think the biggest thing in my career was, you know, offensive linemen couldn't extend their arms and hands when they pass block. They had to keep their hands within the framework of their body. Well, you know, you can't pass protect a defensive end that way. And so if you go back and you look at the statistics from all those days in the early 70s, I guess all the way to about 78, you know, quarterbacks only threw the ball 18 to 20 times a game. So yeah, I would have liked to have played today when I can throw it 40 or 50.
Ken, I'm sure you've been following the World Series. We just talked to Chris Seelback, former player for the Atlanta Braves, and we talked to him about how the game of baseball has evolving. I'll pose the same question to you in your sport. How has the game of football evolved over the years from the time you were playing to now?
Well, I think, you know, as we just talked about a little bit, it's a passing game now. And, you know, you don't see those, you know, the teams, although I guess you could say the Tennessee Titans are one of those with Derrick Henry, but, you know, running the football and playing good defense, you know, I don't think you score enough points to win. So I think the running game is important, but if you can't throw the football, throw it successfully, get the ball down the field, I think you're going to struggle.
Yeah, it's definitely the mindset of, you know, three different things can happen when you pass and two of them are bad has definitely gone by the wayside. We're throwing it all the time now. Do you see that ever kind of starting to shift back, or is you know, the days of run the ball first kind of started to go by the wayside? Is do we ever come back from this, or is it off in the woods now?
Well, you know, I don't think in foreseeable future it's not going to be run first. And gosh, how many teams in the league have a fullback on their roster?
Very
few. You don't see teams line up, you know, with a tight end, a fullback, and a halfback, you know, very often anymore. And now teams are very successful running the football from, you know, three and four wide receivers. And I think that's kind of the running game that you have now. And I think you get a chance to run the football when you can throw it successfully. And, you know, it's when you get there, and if you've got those receivers on the outside and you're trying to play a two deep shell to kind of cover up from some of that, it opens up a few more running lanes. So you've got to be able to run the football, but I don't think that's the main focus anymore.
Yeah. I certainly think the game has changed for good in that area. And a couple of names I've been really impressed with so far early in this season at quarterback. One to start, Kyler Murray has had in Arizona. So dangerous to contain with his ability on the ground. Josh Allen off to an excellent start. And just outstanding to see Dak Prescott succeed in Dallas after the season-ending ankle injury last year. Which one of these three would be your top candidate for most valuable player so far? Or is there someone else more deserving?
Well, you know, I think, you know, you look around the league, and I think that's what's exciting, is because there are so many good quarterbacks. You know, the ones that you talked about there, and you know, we've got Justin Herbert, you know, with San Diego, you know, another one of those guys, you know, a Joe Burrow, and you know, heck, you know, Mahomes, you know, although he's struggling with turnovers a little bit this year, I think, you know, he is a good young quarterback. I think what's in his third or fourth year. So, and you know, just the crop of quarterbacks that came out last year, I think, you know, Trevor Lawrence is going to be a real good quarterback. We just got to, you know, kind of get some people around him down in Jacksonville as well. And, you know, that's what the tough thing on high draft quarterbacks is, you're a high draft choice and going to those teams because they weren't very good and they've got a high draft choice. And it just takes a while to go ahead and build a team around them.
Yeah, certainly. And I think we expect quarterbacks, especially high draft picks, to produce sooner than ever before. I mean, it used to be unthinkable for a rookie to come in and start right out of the gate. But anymore, you know, you talked about that rookie contract you get a quarterback on, you have to take advantage of that window. So, you know, people just aren't taking as much time to let a guy develop behind somebody like Rodgers did with Favre, or like Brady did with Bledsoe. You have to, I mean, the time frame, the window is so narrow a lot of times for these coaches and general managers to compete. They have to do it right away now, right?
Oh, yeah. But that's, you know, kind of the tough thing for quarterbacks sometimes is you go in when your football team is not very good and your offensive right. line is not very good, and you can lose confidence in a hurry. And so I think that's the balancing act that you have as a head coach and as an organizational to make those decisions. You know, when do we play the kid? So, you know, I know Justin Fields is going through that, you know, yep. in Chicago a little bit. And, you know, they signed Andy Dalton in the offense or in the offseason to kind of give him a little time. And unfortunately, you know, Andy got hurt in about the third game of the year and they decided to go with Justin. And once you do that, then you don't go back.
Well, a very interesting day yesterday. It was the day of the backup quarterback. We saw four different second-string guys get the wins for their teams. They combined for 9 total touchdowns, including Mike White over in New York. And how difficult is it as a backup to step into that leading role in the offense? Of course, kind of different circumstances when you're thrust in mid-game versus having that entire week to prepare for the game. But how impressive is it to see a four backups succeed and win the game for their teams, including two of them in their very first career NFL starts?
Well, I think the teams feel very good about that they do have a backup quarterback that's ready to go. You know, Mike White, you had to be impressed with the way that he played yesterday, you know, them. And then, you know, the quarterback for Dallas last night going up, you know, into Minnesota and winning in a tough environment up there. And so, you know, you feel good about those situations because, again, that's one of the tough things, too, is, you know, you've only got so much money on with a salary cap, and it's tough to afford sometimes a high priced backup that may be a veteran. So it was good to see those guys successful, even though White yeah. happened to beat the Bengals.
Yeah, it's I think some of that has to do with you know, the college game. The offenses are so many of them. I mean, you still see a lot of variety in the offenses, but so many of them are starting to mimic NFL systems and they're starting to run the same stuff. So it feels like more and more college quarterbacks are coming out prepared to at least see the kinds of defenses that they're going to see, make the kind of reads they're going to need to make because they're doing more of that in college. Do you feel like we have a better training ground in college football to develop NFL quarterbacks than we ever have before?
Well, I think it's nice because they're throwing the football a lot, but I think the yeah. biggest adjustment that they have coming into the NFL is the number of different protection schemes that you mm-hmm. run in the NFL and understanding the weaknesses, where you're hot, the adjustments I may have to make against, you know, certain defenses, those kind of things. And then I think the other big thing is, you know, you watch on Saturdays and gosh, these receivers get wide open and you don't necessarily see that in the NFL. And, you know, for a young guy, you know, what's open in college and what's open in the NFL are two different things. And, You know, you watch some of these great throws the quarterbacks have been making, and, you know, whether it's that back shoulder throw they have to be able to throw, or, you know, throw it down and in when it's required. And, you know, like I say, when a guy may have somebody on his shoulder, but his other shoulder's still open.
Throw him open, right?
That's exactly right.
We have a lot of NFL ties in our area and in Hilton Head and in the Lowcountry. Two stars right now in the league, Puna Ford in Seattle, and then Dee Delaney on the defending Super Bowl champion Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And both with just amazing stories, both having to earn their roster spots the hard way. Puna was undrafted. He was signed by Seattle, working his way onto the team in preseason. Delaney bounced around a couple teams early on. He was released, didn't play football all of 2020, that COVID year. Was signed by Tampa Bay this spring and then battled during that roster spot. Now he just got his first NFL interception against Chicago last week. So how impressive are these incredible stories of resilience and hard work? And I'm sure you know how difficult it is for undrafted players to make it into the league and succeed.
No question about it. And, you know, I think both those kids, you know, seem to be really great kids. Their heads are on right. They work hard and, you know, a little bit more familiar with Ford, but just the impact he's made out in Seattle. And, you know, you watch him play on TV and he's a main contributor for their defense.
Have you been able to catch any, keep up with any local high school players this year? Have you seen the Snead kid at Hilton Head, or have you been too busy for that?
I have not this year, you know, gotten to any of the games. It's just like I said, with my foundation and, you know, the grandkids and some of their sports, we've been kind of hitting the road a lot between, you know, here in Cincinnati. And in fact, we've got to go up there. I've got to do an autograph appearance, and what, you know, was going to be a 4-day trip. I got a call from my grandson, and his flag football team is now playing, down at Paul Brown Stadium the Sunday before. And then Grandpa, can you make it? Of course, I can't turn that one down. And, you know, so then, you know, then we got another game by somebody else. And so a 4-day trip turned into a 2-week trip.
You mentioned your foundation. Tell me about all these amazing things that you're doing to make a difference in the city of Cincinnati.
Well, you know, we started it about, you know, 10, 12 years ago, my wife and I, because we have a nephew that's severely autistic and, you know, wanted him to be able to live his life to the fullest. And, you know, he is on the severe side and he requires, you know, 24/7 care. But we had the idea we'd like to build a community. And I'd seen several down in Florida that were up and running. And, you know, a few years ago, merged with another foundation with very similar aspirations. And we've made, you know, tremendous strides, you know, since then. That we have our own building now. And I talked about the coffee shop that we have there, but we also service 90 adults a week in adult daycare services. And we have a music therapy, and it is so fun to go. We have a large room in the back with our little studio in it, and to see these, you know, and I call them kids, but these adults back there with instruments, and we have a great staff of 3 people working with them and playing instruments, and to see them, you know, making music and the pure unadulterated joy that's in their eyes just, you know, brought me to tears. We also have over 20 engage outings a month where we go out in small groups into the city, whether it's to a ball game, out to dinner, to a putt-putt course, or in a lot of cases, it's volunteering at another nonprofit. And those service over 200 adults a month. But I think the real exciting thing is we've purchased 23 acres in the Cincinnati area, and we're starting our capital campaign at the first of the year. And we're going to break ground this year on a community for adults with developmental disabilities that will actually house about 170 people in a variety of options, whether it's cottages, whether it's apartment styles. We have a great community center on property, a lot of green space, another aquaponics venture there that'll have a cafe in it for the public to come in. So phase one, hopefully, is done by October of 2023. So when that's completed and we kind of cut the ribbon for that and our first adults move in, that will be a very satisfying day for me.
Well, that is just fantastic work you're doing, Ken, and still giving back so much to the city of Cincinnati, where you had such great success and made people so happy for so many years with the Bengals. So congratulations to you on your continued success off the field and all the great work you're doing and being a great grandpa too. You know, getting to Cincinnati for those games is huge.
Yeah, well, one exciting thing that's going on is I actually have my own beer in Cincinnati, Kenny's Day Drinking Lager. You know, it's Who Day, and so our day is DEY. But a new local brewery there had called me, and they really like what we're doing with our foundation. They wanted to brew a beer for me and the foundation with a certain amount of the proceeds going to the foundation. And I had to stop him in his tracks, and I said, you know, I'm not a big fan of the microbreweries. I can't find anything I like to drink. You know, I don't like the IPAs. A lot of them leave an aftertaste. I don't like the heavier beers. He says, oh, I know you like Keystone Light. We're going to brew a beer like Keystone Light. So it is up and running, and it's very successful in the Cincinnati area. And in fact, I am working kind of behind the scenes to see if we can't get it brewed down here on the island.
I was going to say, we've got quite a brewing scene here on the island, and we've got a lot of Bengals fans down here. So you might be able to get the old day drinking going down here.
Well, you know, like I say, you can't drink all day unless you start in the morning. And I can do it if I'm tailgating, but that's about it.
Awesome stuff. Well, I know you're such a big Bengals supporter, but how about University of Cincinnati football this year? Number 2 in the country and looking like a possible college football playoff contender. Have you been able to follow the Bearcats?
Oh, heck yeah. And what's nice is when you're number 2 in the country, all your games are televised. It was on ESPN2 this week. And, you know, I think, you know, they had the big win when they went to Indiana win, and then their next game was going to Notre Dame and winning. You know, the last couple of weeks, you know, they kind of struggled with Navy, you know, and then, you know, last week's game, you know, and although they win, I think sometimes when you look at a group of 5 school that, you know, every one of those games should be 50-10, you know, and that's not going to happen every week. But I know they've got good players. Again, you know, they've got a quarterback in this Desmond Ridder. That's really good. They've got a solid defense. And so we're keeping our fingers crossed that they might be the first group of 5 team to sneak into the playoffs. I guess we'll find out tomorrow night when the football playoff committee comes out with their first poll.
Yes, we will. All right. Well, before we let you go, Kenny, Cincinnati guy. So let's talk chili a little bit. What all you putting on there?
Well, you know, it's, you know, mine is Skyline, and you know, I like the cheese conies, you know, give me that hot dog in a bun with mustard and, you know, and onions on it, put the chili on and that shredded cheese, and I'm good for about 4.
Oh, yeah, that sounds great. One more question. We got some high school playoff teams that are getting ready to start their postseason runs this Friday night. What advice can you give them to approaching that winner-go-home playoff mentality as they look to eye some state championships?
Well, I think you just have to, you know, do your job. You know, you get in those games and you know, just do my job and trust the person next to me to do their jobs as well. And, you know, I can't make plays for 4 different players. So, you know, focus on that. Focus on what you can do and be as good as you can play. And then the team should take care of itself.
Great advice from an NFL legend, former MVP, and Cincinnati Bengals Ring of Honor member, Ken Anderson. Thanks so much for joining us, Ken. We appreciate it. Always great to catch up with you.
Well, Justin, West, you know, always good being with you guys, and I hope you'll call me again soon.
We'll definitely do it. Thanks so much to Ken Anderson. Thanks to you for joining us for this Loco Sit-Down. As always, you'll hear an excerpt of it on the Loco Sports Lowdown podcast, and then you can hear the full episode right here every week on the Loco Sit-Down. Thanks so much to Ken Anderson. For Wes Kerr, I am Justin Jarrett. Until next time. Go Loco.